Coming up in this episode, CBS and Axanar are at it again. We find out if Short Trek Season 2 has the meats. Picard dreams of electric androids. All that and more. This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 52, for Friday, October 18th, 2019. We're in trouble now. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me from 930 years in the future, our Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello there.
And, let's see, it's 930 years, you see. And Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
This ship gets great mileage.
Yes, it's not the years or the mileage, it's the years and the mileage. Ah, well, what have you folks been up to in the past couple of weeks? Chuck, you took a trip. You were showing us a photo. You visited a planet looking for the Nexus?
Really?
Yes. We took a trip up to Page, Arizona, which is the home of Antelope Canyon, the Glen Canyon Dam, and the Horseshoe Bend. Very scenic places. If you ever have seen the Microsoft screensaver with the orange curvy rocks, that's Antelope Canyon. And it's on the Earth Porn subreddit a number of times. Well, we were at the overlook to the Glen Canyon Dam, and I noticed these metallic structures sort of just hanging on the side of the rock, looking like they were waiting for a billboard to be hung up or something. And it reminded me of Saren's little platform where he launches the missile into the ribbon.
Yeah.
Or into the star, right, to capture the ribbon. And I went,
well. So was Kirk kind of like leaning there on the bridge or something? Or,
you know? No, but I did bury a guy under a pile of rocks.
Oh, well. was he dead? Just asking.
Nobody soon will be.
I swear he was dead when I got there.
Yeah. We killed them. All the rocks I put on top of them. Yeah, the way, what?
Actually, it was funny as I saw the picture without reading anything, and I went, oh, that looks like Viridian 3.
Viridian 3, no ribbon, bad timing.
Ah, well, like I said, I blame Kirk for all of that.
But if you're ever in the Arizona area, please put Page, Arizona on one of your stops. It is one of nature's wonders. Beautiful place.
Yeah, the pictures look really great. All right, but it's time to get to more Trek stuff, because that was Trek stuff. So why am I saying
more? We got more.
There's more. Matter of fact, Charlie, we're going to open up subspace chatter. Charlie.
It's the same answer.
You know, but we do need it, and we're going to get some right now. Starting off with a story from Chuck.
All right. We mentioned, of course, last episode, the sad news that Aaron Eisenberg had passed away. And from DailyStarTrekNews.com, we find out that Will Wheaton is watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine in Aaron's honor. So while fans and colleagues spent the last couple of weeks mourning Deep Space Nine actor Aaron Eisenberg's passing, one former Star Trek actor has found a unique way of honoring his memory. Will Wheaton, Star Trek Next Generation's Wesley Crusher, oh, spoiler alert, he posted on his blog September 27th that he decided to watch Deep Space Nine, something he'd never done before. Wow, I kind of find that a little surprising, but I know that
I do too.
He said he doesn't have time to get into some of the other sci-fi shows that others did. When we were on the cruise, he said he hasn't had a chance to watch B5 or what was the other one he mentioned that we just watched?
Stargate?
Yeah, Stargate, that was it. So he'd like to, but he's just too busy to do that. Quoting the post, when Deep Space Nine was new, I was still working on Next Gen. I recall feeling this strong sense of sibling rivalry, entirely my issue, never created or encouraged by anyone else, that got between me and my ability to watch the show and give it a chance it deserved. Over the years, I've wondered what exactly I missed, but I never made it a priority to find out. With the passing of my friend Aaron last week, I thought I could remember and honor him by finally watching the series he gave so many years of his life and career to. So he goes on to say that he's not watching every episode of DS9. Rather, he's using it as a guide to watching the series in about 80 hours. He also said that watching the show is extra special to him because of his own personal emotional journey. Quote, I had all this emotional baggage that got in between me and watching the show, he said, but the therapeutic emotional work I've done in the past year has let me heal a lot of stuff and stop carrying around the emotional baggage. So watching Deep Space Nine is extra special to me because it lets me watch Star Trek and it lets me love Star Trek in a way that I hadn't been able to for essentially my entire adult life. So if you want a link to Will Wheaton's post about his 80-hour guide, we have that and you can find that. It's actually, you have 82.5 hours. I love that. Over at our show notes, episode 50. Are we on 51 or 52?
52,
like the weeks in the year and the cards in a deck.
And that's 52 hours.
Over at the topic is over as the topic is trek.com.
I'm sorry, 52 and a third.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. And if you click through to the guide that Will was talking about, it starts off with a very long piece. I was surprised it wasn't just a list of watch these episodes. It's right. Got a lot of lead in talking about, you know, what Deep Space Nine was, what was important about it, the different characters in it, how it fit into, you know, Star Trek lore, all this other information. So it really is kind of a straight up beginner's guide to watching Deep Space Nine. And I think that, I don't know how Will found this article. It's on Medium. But it's very informative, especially for somebody, as I said, that's just starting to watch Deep Space Nine.
Very cool.
And by the way, I love this little in the middle of the article that you were just talking about on the Deep Space Nine watch list. This little Nog and Jake go back and forth. Nog says, "It's my money, Jake. If you want to make a bid in the auction, use your own money." Jake says, "I'm human. We don't have money. Or we don't have any money." Nog says, "It's not my fault your species decided to abandon currency-based economics in favor of philosophy of self-enhancement." Jake says, "Well, hey," he says, "hey, watch it. There's nothing wrong with our philosophy. We work to better ourselves and the rest of humanity." Nog says, What does that mean exactly?" Jake says, It means we don't need money." Nog says, "Well, if you don't need money, you certainly don't need mine."
There you go. Ran rings around him logically.
I think I smell a little Vulcan in there, too.
Indeed. All right. And for our next story, we're going to do a follow-up on a story we talked about last episode. And it actually references the article we were talking about. Let me explain. This article comes to us from Bounding Into Comics. I don't know whether that's a pun or just kind of an action word. I'm not sure what Bounding Into Comics. But anyway, CBS sends breach of notice to Star Trek fan film Axanar.
Uh-oh.
On Facebook, Axanar confirmed they had been sent a letter from CBS attorneys that accused them of labeling the film a, quote, independent Star Trek film. However, they note eliminated the reference after receiving the letter. On October 1st, this is a quote from Axanar Productions. On October 1st, Axanar Productions received a notice of breach letter from CBS attorneys. It noted that we had improperly referred to Axanar as an independent Star Trek film in a recent press release about our October filming schedule. That press release appeared to have been run in local Atlanta newspaper 11 Alive that reported the film would be going into production beginning on October 4th. They also described the film as an independent Star Trek film. Axanar agreed to the accusation and noted they eliminated the reference moving forward. "We agreed and immediately eliminated that reference," they said. Their statement also indicated that CBS took issue with Axanar's Patreon for Aries Studios, indicating that it violated their 2017 agreement. They claimed this accusation is, quote, without merit, close quote, because it is a separate entity from Axanar and acts as a soundstage for a number of productions. Again, this is quoting Axanar Productions. CBS also claimed that the Patreon campaign for Aries Studio violated the separation agreement, since Aries Studios is a separate legal entity from Axanar Productions and serves as a soundstage for both fan film productions and student filmmakers. CBS's assertion is without merit. They concluded by noting that they will, quote, work within the spirit of the settlement agreed, but will also protect their legal rights. So things are not really necessarily over, or the CBS attorneys are sitting there going over everything very carefully that Axanar is doing, obviously.
If they're not an independent Star Trek film, what is the proper terminology they should be using? I didn't pick that up.
Fan film?
I'm wondering if that phrasing of calling it just a film rather than a fan film is part of the issue.
Okay, because I was wondering if it was the independent part. Well, they're not associated with CBS in any way. In fact, right. They're furthest thing from it. They're not supposed to be. So
that's why they can't be an independent Star Trek film. They can be a Star Trek fan film. But independent says that, hey, we're taking Star Trek and we're going to make our own independent thing. Well, they can't quite do it in that context.
I thought independent just meant that you were on your own, not associated with any major studio.
Right. But you're indicating
Star Trek can do that.
You're indicating it's a film. And I think that's where this whole thing started, is that they were making a film.
And it instead of a short?
Right.
So is the argument over the word film?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, because they are making a Star Trek fan film.
Or is it over the independent versus fan film versus fan short? It's like, tell us what we should be saying.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I certainly play one on TV. I'm not exactly sure. They took the entire thing out, so who knows what CBS attorneys want them to say. But all we know is not that.
Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
Yes.
Try again.
Stop doing that. Much.
No, you're still doing it wrong. No, try again.
Yeah.
Harder. More intensity.
Right. Yeah. You're holding it wrong. Okay. Now we're going to move on to an article that is not, well, this is an article that's also related to something we talked about last time, sort of, I guess. So everything is connected all together in this great Star Trek universe. And our story comes to us via Craig.
Yes, via the We Got This Covered website, which they seem like they have everything covered. I've seen their names a million places.
Well, they should uncover it so we can actually see what it is.
Yeah, duh. I know. Anyway, regardless of whether or not Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek movie gets made, it seems as if Paramount still has hopes of making the fourth Kelvin timeline film. We Got This Covered. Oh, I got to keep reading. By what they consider to be a reliable source, the studio will reopen negotiations once Wonder Woman 1984 is out in theaters. So, in other words, talks will begin next summer, given that the DCEU pick arrives on June 5th, 2020.
Wait, of course. Wonder Woman 1984, wasn't that open like 35 years ago?
Yeah, you would think so, but that's a movie coming out next year.
Before Marty McFly even left.
It's a timey-wimey thing. Just go with it.
Yes. So yeah, we're really mixing our genres.
Yeah, that's right. There's nothing to say that things will be 100% worked out with Pine and Hemsworth. I'm sure a little green will straighten them out. We'll sign back on again. But the website sources say that the studio is hopeful. With any luck, all parties involved will find a way to settle the dispute. And Star Trek 4 will get back on track before long. Fingers crossed.
See, I think the problem, though, is I think the problem, you said that, you know, a little green. I think the problem was that that's what happened the first time around, is that Paramount said, we need you to take a little green instead of a lot of green.
Yeah, they were trying. I think that, what we're privy to is what I think what we heard was that, Yeah, they didn't pay what they said they were going to pay, or weren't offering what they said they were going to offer for those roles in a fourth film. And which, you know, hey, you say one thing, you say it, do another, I wouldn't be happy either. So I don't know.
Speaking of Hemsworth, did you see the Men in Black International film?
I did not, and neither did a lot of other people.
So. I thought it was pretty good.
I don't feel alone.
I enjoyed it.
Did you?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to go. I do plan on seeing it at some point.
If you're a Men in Black fan, go see it. It's almost like a reboot. It really is. Of course, I thought the villain was somewhat predictable, but you know, that's just when you see the actor, you go, he's the bad guy. He's been
that predictable.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
they try to lead you astray with the story. You go, you know, maybe it's Charlie over there. No, it's him. Yeah. So Donna and I were split.
Let's see. Wait a minute. That. What does this say at the top of the show notes? The topic is Trek. Oh, sorry, Trek.
I'm just tying in the actors. All right. Telling you what other people are doing.
Right. And I'm thinking that not a lot of people saw Men in Black. I mean, it did okay, but it didn't do the business they were expecting. And I may be wrong, but a lot of the things that Chris Pine has done have underperformed as well.
Seen a pattern. So they should have gone with the original plan A.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, obviously Chris has stuff in the MCU, but I'm sorry.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. That Chris. And we've got, and Chris Pine has, you know, the Wonder Woman franchise, but it seems like it's hard for them to get something to break outside of those things. So it might make it, I'm not sure if this is part of Paramount's thinking that, well, if, you know, if Wonder Woman underperforms, maybe they can kind of say, hey, Chris, you know, maybe you want to think about doing this.
Here's a contract for half of what we offered you last time.
Think about it. Because they also may be thinking that at that point, maybe the merger will have happened and they'll have a bit more clout and maybe they can offer a bit more. I don't know. All right. Now, that's all the stories we're going to cover for Subspace Chatter. However, we don't want to leave you without more to know about what's happening in Trek. So if you go to the show notes for episode 52 over at thetopicistrek.com, we have 17 more stories that we didn't have time to cover. So you can read away all sorts of things about Discovery, about Trek in general, about the new Picard series, anything you want. We've got some of that over there for you. So please, I encourage you to check it out. But now it's time to close up Subspace Chatter. And
Shonk.
I really expect more to happen with that. I just don't know what. And time to go out on our...
We're scanning for the next story, Captain.
Yeah, well, our next story is our main mission. So come up with an effect for that.
We came back from not so good. Yeah.
Our main mission this time around is actually two main missions. So it's main Mishai, Mishigas. I don't know. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about we've had not one, but two Star Trek short treks that have come out since our last episode. They pulled a fast one on us and came out with two of them.
Instead of doing I almost forgot
about the second one.
Monthly last year?
Well, they're going to go to that. We'll talk about that at the end, but they premiered one of them while they were doing the New York Comic Con panel.
Yes.
For Star Trek. Apparently there was some little glitches with that actually happening, but it did come out that day. And very shortly after that, I think it was a week after that, we got our second short trek. So let's back up and talk about,
to be honest with you, I almost forgot about the second one until y'all were like, hey, we were chatting on our chat and, you know, hey, the new one came out. I went, holy crap. I almost forgot because I was expecting it to be another month.
And it was very confusing because the first one we're going to talk about is called Q&A. And we talk about chatting about it. We were chatting, hey, did you see the Star Trek Q&A? Which sounds like, oh, yeah, the question and answer part of the New York Comic Con. No, Q&A, Q&A. So this short features Rebecca Romijn as number one and Ethan Peck as Spock on Spock's first day aboard the Enterprise.
Everybody's most exciting day, first day on a new job.
And as we already knew from the trailer that came out for this weeks ago, so this is not a spoiler. However, I suppose at this point we need to run the klaxon of spoiler alert.
This one. Spoiler alert. Okay, done.
Exactly, because from this point on, we're going to talk about things that have either aired or the trailers, you know, all sorts of things. So bail now or Bailey now if you don't want to know anything more about stuff that you haven't seen yet. All right. So we saw in even the teaser trailer for this that the premise is that Spock and number one are in a turbo lift and the turbo lift gets stopped. It gets stuck. And they have to interact with each other in kind of one of those awkward elevator situations.
But the expectation is set forth before they even step onto the turbo lift, because number one says, you know, you've been on board a whole 30 seconds. You haven't asked me a single question. I expect you to ask questions and to the point of being annoying. Boom. Gauntlet's been thrown. So,
yeah. Challenge accepted and done.
Spock says, I know, annoying.
And some of the Q&A, I love the dialogue, because at one point he's asking, what operating system does this ship run?
Yeah. Of course, she knows which version it is down to the third decimal place, I believe.
And they're comparing it, you know, on that third decimal point. Oh, if instead of 30, you know, we're still at 34 because 35 is...
It's not elegant. Yeah.
That's right.
It was great. And then he decides to switch from technical to something a little more down to home, which didn't work at all.
Yeah, I got disturbed though when he asked if she liked eggplant. I just got really disturbed at that point. I don't know what that just
was. You got annoyed?
Just kind of bizarre. I don't know. It's just like, what is all that about? But yeah, we did get to, and we get to learn a bit about number one.
More than we thought we were going to.
Right.
And then they have to sort of make a pact when they get the turbo lift running again. I love the way they just sealed that up in the Indiana Jones warehouse.
Hey, side note, I thought it was interesting when they showed the outer view of the turbo lift. Mm-hmm. You can see it was on rails like a little train track kind of thing.
They've shown that before, though. I'm pretty sure we've seen that in one of the more modern movies.
We've seen it a couple of times on Discovery.
That's it.
That same thing.
But it looks like a ride at like Magic Mountain.
It does.
And it sort of underscores how much open space is in this ship. Like that was kind of surprising that the ship would have that much negative or empty space in it.
Well, I know a lot of people like roll their eyes. They go, oh, that's not how a turbo lift would work. And I'm thinking,
how do you know?
They probably would point to some diagram saying this is the deal. But I'm thinking, well, maybe yes, maybe no. But you're also trying to communicate that this is something that not only goes horizontally, goes vertically and horizontally, you know, to move about the ship to get from point A to point B. What I was surprised at was the chief engineer was obviously Scottish.
Had the accent, yep.
But really had no clue what was wrong. It could be this, it could be that, it could be the other thing. I'm saying the ship is not very well run.
Did you try reversing the polarity?
You know, she's trying to, you know, well, we're going to have somebody rappel down as soon as we can find the equipment because we had it on a mission someplace and we can't seem to find it now. And
yeah, that was a little chaotic.
So I think that there's going to be some training drills going on as soon as.
It could have been the engineer's first day, too.
Could have been. That's true.
Yep.
And then after that, as I said, we got very shortly thereafter our second short trek.
Hold on.
Oh, you've got more thoughts on Q&A? Do you have some Q&A about Q&A?
Yeah. We're talking about spoilers here, right?
Well, yeah, because we ran the alert.
I didn't want to ruin the ending.
Oh, that's right.
No, I wasn't talking about the ending, but
this one doesn't. Yeah.
Well, we're talking about inside the elevator, and you know, yes. She starts singing Gilbert and Sullivan.
You ruined it. That was what I was trying to avoid.
Well, we're doing spoilers. So.
Okay, fair enough.
It just caught me off guard when she started singing, and then I love that. Her and Spock, you know, right at the end there, just for a brief moment, they were laughing,
you know,
kind of laugh.
Right.
He totally, it was almost like he broke character.
Yeah. I was like, what? And then in like 2 seconds, excuse me. He's done. He cut it off. I just thought that was really cool the way they did that. Cause I kind of laughed. Oh, that was awkward.
I can see him singing that when he was in that bowl-shaped school that he has.
Oh, gosh, it's terrible.
You are the model of what, Spock? I do not understand.
Not the modern major general we know.
But, Mr. Sarek, anyway, your son has been caught singing in school again.
Again? Yeah. Where did it go wrong? Oh, we've got a list of the things you've done wrong, Sarek. Hold on a second here. So we're going to start with Burnham. We're going to start with Spock. We're going to start with, Cyborg. Which one do you want to start it with? But
I got to tell you. I'm sorry.
No. I'm going to say that that fourth, you know, talk about that fourth child that we still don't know that was part of that family.
The sellout?
Yeah. Anyway, but I thought it was really good. I like seeing their interaction and an almost attraction there for a little bit, brief one, or my admiration maybe.
I think that we've seen different variations on what these short treks are, and you get a feeling some of them are more tied into plot than other ones, and I have a feeling that this one. Uh-huh. Pretty much is straight up character background. Even if you ended up having, you know, the Pike series that we're all looking for, that I don't see this as being anything major. I think this really was just
an insight.
Yeah. Here's some background.
Which is a great segue to the second one, because the second one is the same kind of thing. It's like, here's how this happened, or here's a little view into how we got to this point.
Well, just to bookend that, the other one is that I was thinking that it was actually when I left that, I went, I really want to see more of what's going on in Enterprise. So I have a feeling that even though it was more a character between them two but I think it's to whet your appetite. For a little more Pike and Spock Enterprise.
And I was watching the clip that was attached to one of our other articles for the New York Comic Con panel. And you know, the writers are not poo-pooing the idea of a Pike series. They're listening to the crowd, and if the crowd says we want Pike, then the executive's ears are gonna perk up.
Well, I some of the stories I've heard, the executive ears have already perked up about it. It's just slotting it that seems to be the issue at this point.
Yeah, and exactly. Anson Mount and Ethan Peck both have gone on the record and said that they would love to do that. They literally said that. It was like,
well, heck yeah.
Okay, if you're in negotiation, be like, yeah, you know, it'd be nice to do. Yeah,
could be.
But no, they actually said they'd love it. I'm like, okay,
defining role.
Sure. Look what it did for Shatner.
Yes. No. You too can have a CPAP commercial when you're in Europe. But anyway, let's move on from. So our second short trek was The Trouble with Edward. And again, we saw an interesting background story, as Chuck was saying. This one features Rosa Salazar, who was Attila, the battle angel in the movie that came out. I think it was last year.
Right. That's why she looked familiar. That's right.
As Captain Lynn Lucero and H. John Benjamin from Archer, well, voices from Archer and also from the Arby's commercials and from Dr. Katz, as Edward Larkin aboard the research vessel Cabot. And we find out a bit about the background on the Tribbles. Now, I don't know my Tribble lore well enough to know.
Oh, Clinton.
I know. I should research.
Tribblepedia.com?
Well, because Edward talks about the planet that they come from and what their scientific name is.
Which had Tribiclius or something in the front end.
Right. So it seems like now this is the part where I try to, have things make some sense. And I know that people probably have more or less issues than me with this, but okay, if they know that much about Tribbles, why does McCoy have such a hard time trying to research what they are?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Find out that they're born pregnant and the blah, 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 blah.
I found a bit of repetitive there as well. Like, maybe his research notes were lost when the ship got overrun. I don't know.
But aside, putting some of that aside, it's meant to be very tongue-in-cheek, and that part I didn't mind at all, that we just have this hapless character. And actually, we end up with two hapless characters because, let's face it, the captain is a pretty hapless character by the end of this thing as well.
She's a victim of the other hapless character. And I think we've all worked with an Edward at some point in our career.
Yeah, but, talk about first days and being, bad news on your first day.
Yeah, it's bad when you have a bad day and it's the first day of you being a captain.
Well, it sounded like there was a time span in there, because at the hearing at the end, they said, in your first 2 weeks as captain. So there was a lead up period. It wasn't like she stepped on board and things blew up.
Right. Well, there's probably that period of resentment. And then Edward gets back to his research.
Right. Because he's a protein specialist scientist, because she's assigned aboard a science research vessel. So you get all these scientists, and she's a scientist, and she doesn't like the guy from the get-go, because he is a complete loser. No, what is she? At the end, she calls him a complete... He's an idiot.
He's an idiot.
So she reassigns him, and now he's got resentment. And, hey, everybody seems to love her. No, they don't.
I'm sorry. I was laughing at the vision of when he walked out. What's going on? And then you pan back, and he's in his underwear in the hallway.
Yes. So in the future, they have tidy whities, but they're more of a bluish Starfleet color.
Silver blue. Yeah. That was funny. You see him from the top up, from his like chest up at first, and then when they pan back, it's
like no. Pants, Edward. Yeah. Pants.
Yes. Boundaries.
I thought they did a good job, especially stuff where he was working and you could see that he was getting annoyed, where she was kind of in the background laughing and kind of bonding with
the other her coworkers. Yeah.
Right. Just kind of bonding with them. And I guess things are a little more relaxed on a research vessel. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then the Tribble sort of bouncing out, trying to escape.
I asked my wife Bonnie if she was having some some bad flashbacks, because we had at a convention several years ago, we had a Tribble bash, and several people, including Bonnie, made hundreds and hundreds of Tribbles. And as the scenes with these things, I said, "Are you okay? Can you finish watching this, or is this giving you bad vibes?"
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of that was CG, because there was a whole lot of Tribbles in some of those scenes.
Yes. And I was surprised to see them actually giving birth. Like popcorn, man. They were little Tribbles popping out of bigger Tribbles.
I was thinking, is that the first time we've actually seen a Tribble reproduce? Just like, boop.
Actually, those were the most active Tribbles I think we've ever seen.
That's true. Jumping around. Usually they just sit there and cool.
One of them, somehow they got them to calm down. Enough. I don't know.
Yeah, one of them was hard enough to actually knock Edward down. you know, one went boom and hit him in the head and he fell down and the tidal wave.
So there may be different subspecies of tribbles is what you're saying.
Right.
Maybe, because maybe the males are harder than the females or the other way around. I can't tell what they are.
Because remember one of them, he said, fell off of his desk and it died. So I'm not sure if they're all made of.
Was that before or after his experiment?
That was before.
Okay. So all right.
Yeah. And then when you think the episode is over,
keep watching past the end of the credits.
Don't
Let it roll.
Even beyond the little
fade to black. Keep going.
CBS Studios thing at the end. It's like normally where you would just end it or something. But yeah, it's way after that.
Because we get Star Trek's first ever post-credit scene.
Are you calling this a scene?
I would call it a scene.
It was definitely a scene.
Don't make a scene out of this scene. It's a scene, man. It's a scene.
It was quite a scene.
So we end up with a commercial for Tribble cereal.
Yeah, which is funny because you never seen a Star Trek commercial per se.
Oh, this was pure tongue in cheek. I think somebody was sitting on this for decades, waiting for the right moment to spring their humor on the world.
Because they play it like it's a VHS tape, but even, you know, it even has a play and there's, I think, a little bit of noise at the beginning of it. Yeah. It's like, when was this recorded?
Surprise, it wasn't in 4x3 format. It was not. It was 16x9. And it's for Tribble cereal, so they have mom serving the kids a nutritious breakfast. And what was the line about the prize at the bottom of the box?
There's a prize at the bottom, not that you'll ever get to the bottom.
Because the box just keeps pouring tribbles into the bowl. And of course the kids are, it tickles. And they show them chewing the tribbles.
And then she puts it in her mouth. The whole fuzzy thing is like, whoa. Yeah.
Save those things.
There are some disclaimers if you watch very carefully. One is about how Edward's DNA is not actually, DNA is not actually sanctioned by the Federation. The other one I did capture a screenshot of. It says, fur may present choking hazard. It is suggested you shave cereal with Edward brand Tribble razor included in Tribble Cereal Super Salon playset sold separately. Edward Cereals LLC is not responsible if Tribbles survive and replicate in digestive tract. Chew thoroughly. They went, and then there were three flavors. What was original?
It was the one with berries, and then I think the hot ranch.
Yeah, Flaming Hot.
Yeah, Flaming Hot Ranch. That's right.
It's either on fire or smoking or something at the end of it. It's just like, wow, that's hot stuff.
I think it had a picture of a little demon or something on the box.
Yeah. No, that was the Tribble. He had teeth and smiling, but yeah, that one was just a little more demonic than the others.
And then to top that off, they have little cartoon Tribbles that come out, and I think they say, we're pregnant with flavor.
Yeah, nice touch. Little ditties like that that inspire us to keep going with this show and Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Like, why didn't we think of that? Why didn't we think of that?
Really, Chuck?
There are many inspirations.
True. Okay, true.
Now, these are the first two. We actually have four more short treks to go. And at this point, they're going on the once a month. It's the first... the second Thursday of the month. So the next one will be November 14th, called Ask Not. December 12th, we're going to have two of them, and I think these are the two animated episodes. So we have The Girl Who Made the Stars and Ephraim and Dot. Now, The Girl Who Made the Stars, that is a reference to what Burnham talks about, the African legend. She talks about that in the opening of episode of season two.
Oh, yes.
The girl who threw it into the stars, into the sky and made the stars. When that episode came out, I looked up. There are a couple of variations on that legend, all pretty much the same, but so they've got some leeway about how to tell the story, if that's indeed what they're doing. And I'm thinking, if it's an animated episode, why not?
Yeah, two of them, because two of them are supposed to be animated.
Right. So these two, these are the two that are The Girl Who Made the Star. Because I know that Ephraim and Dot is the one that Michael Giacchino, the guy who, the composer who did this, the movie, music for the Star Trek reboot movies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He directed and is writing the music for this one. Giacchino was also credited in the, at least the last episode, the Trouble with Edward. He apparently is doing some mentoring of other composers for the music for these other short treks.
I saw that.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Hmm.
And then on January 9th of next year, we get Children of Mars. And it's been stated that this is sort of a Picard prequel.
Okay.
Now, that's pretty much all we know about these. We didn't even get a trailer for, which is what I was waiting for the end of it, The Trouble with Edward. We didn't get a trailer for Ask Not. I don't think we know anything about any of these in great, you know, to say, oh, this is one that's about so-and-so. This one, this is another one that has Pike and Spock in it or something. We don't know anything at this point, but they're coming at us pretty quick at this point.
Yeah. We need to pace ourselves.
We do. We do. Well, they're once a month, and I'm sure it will work out so that they come out right after we record. So that will work out well for us.
I'll be in Sydney on the 14th. Does that mean I get it before you do?
Yes, but it'll be playing upside down. So
it's in PAL format instead of NTSC.
Hey, PAL, how you doing?
To offset the video, you need to flush a toilet.
I need to upconvert it.
Yeah.
And that does it for the short treks at this point. But there was also this little thing called New York Comic Con earlier in the month.
What?
And we had panels about Discovery
and Picard.
And about Picard. Of course, part of those panels, they just happened to have with them brand new trailers for each of the shows. We're going to start by talking about the trailer for season 3.
Which is funny because they blanked them out on the video that we were watching, but I had already watched them because it was earlier.
They blanked them out.
Yes.
Yeah, they always do that in the live feeds because it's just for the people in the auditorium for the live feed.
Oh, right.
And we were watching a recording of the live feed, so all the edits are still there. It was don't freak out when you see this video, too, because we're going to the time mark that Clinton gives you in the show notes. Fast forwards past a lot of the intro stuff and you get right to the Discovery panel. And I looked at the time and went, this is over 6 hours long. No.
Well, that's the entire day.
The entire feed.
That's just the trailer.
And probably
the trailer is 6 hours.
At least half, if not two thirds of it, there's nothing there. I fast forwarded.
Well, that's the clearing of the room. That's blah, 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 that kind of stuff.
No, it's just empty for hours. That yellow screenshot. Yeah, there's like three panels on that whole thing.
That was at Madison Square Garden. They were in the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
So maybe it's the case of that feed. Those panels were all that was in that venue.
Right. That's what I'm saying is it was a room specific feed and that room was unused for a certain number of hours till the last panel came back. Okay, so be warned. Right. It's fun to watch. You can zip through them pretty quickly, but tell us more about the trailers.
Well, we learned a lot, and yet we learned nothing. By which I mean we learned that Burnham arrives, but she's clearly separated from the rest of the Discovery crew on this planet. She somehow, and she's been looking for a year for what she says, the domino that started this whole thing. And I'm thinking that means her mother. But I don't know if that's what she's talking about. The weird thing for me is that we see her in this space, like a, almost like this giant hotel room. And I'm thinking, where is she that she's, when we first see her, she's just like on the ground covered in soot, like from volcanic ash or something.
Right.
Where is this scene taking place? And we don't have any answer to that. We don't know if she's on Terra Elysium, if this is supposed to be New Eden and it's not what it was supposed to be. So we don't have an answer to that. We see some Andorians using mm-hmm. these bizarre weapons that appear to be like the main one is holding like a pulse weapon with two hands out in front of him. And he's firing that at Burnham and the new character, Cleveland Booker. But we don't know what that location is that they're in. Then we see someone or some people in a very stark, modernistic room, and they unfurl a United Federation of Planets flag. And the first thing that leaps out is that there are now only six stars on this flag.
Instead of, what, like right. 40 or 50? It's a very profuse logo right now.
Which is weird, because I always thought of that flag, you know, a lot of the stars on there just being representation of, you know, planets, like lots of stuff. I don't know if it was really meant to include every single member of the Federation.
Like the United States flag, the stars represents the states.
But I think it was a good visual.
I think
visual,
that is the case. I think I do remember reading that.
I thought there'd be more of them then.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's a good representation to say, well, remember all that stuff that was on there before? Yeah, well, now we're down to six.
We've had budget cuts.
And we're not sure who the six are.
Well, yeah. I would guess that a lot of the ones that, even the originals, the fact that the Andorians are firing weapons at them kind of leads me to believe that the Andorians aren't part of the Federation right now.
Well,
or maybe they don't understand who Michael and, was it Cleveland?
Cleveland Booker are, yeah. Yeah,
they don't understand who they are yet. So or, let's fire first and ask questions later.
Yeah, or they know who Booker is. Well, you know, that's another possibility. We do see some other species in here. There's another shot where we see not only more Andorians, we see a Lurian, which is Morn's species. In the background, there appears to be a Cardassian.
But the Lurian is just holding a stein of ale. Not much for fighting. I'm just kidding.
And then I think it's hard to tell if it's a human or a Trill that's lead, because you can't really make out enough detail to tell, because we also see Trill in another scene.
Yes.
And there's another character in the scene that has the Lurian and the Cardassian and the Andorian, but it was a species that I couldn't recognize what species that was. So I'm not sure if that's just a bad angle or I'm just not scanning it correctly, you know, being able to recognize it. So we also see Giorgio. And I think in the last episode, I think I said that Giorgio was not on the Discovery. Well, of course she was on the Discovery. The more I thought about it, and I apologize if I said that during the episode, because she's fighting Control/Leland in the Spore Drive room at the end of the episode.
You know, right.
So clearly she was there. So we see her, we see Saru. They appear to be on some sort of away mission. I can't tell if it's a rescue mission to save Burnham. We see Tilly also in the same kind of dark garb with long trench coat type of deal going on. So questions there. Now there's a character that's going into a pool of some sort of milky water as well.
First, standing next to it, and then you see somebody laying in it. I wasn't sure if that was Michael or not, but
I'm not sure if it is. I don't think it is.
It almost had that, the pool with the precogs in it.
Right.
That's kind of the vibe I got on
Minority Report?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people are speculating that this is kind of the look of a situation where Trill is getting a host. I mean, not a host, but getting a symbiote.
We saw that before on Deep Space Nine.
Right. So
I just kind of put the worm on the belly and let it do its thing.
We put it in the flap. We saw it on that TNG also.
Yeah.
Then we see a person who's obviously not a member of the Discovery crew because they're not wearing a Discovery uniform in a Jeffries tube working on a holographic panel, this control panel. So is that person trying to sabotage Discovery? Are they working with Discovery doing something? So there's just a lot of questions going on in this thing, and I can't sew all these pieces together.
Oops. And we were given information from the whole season, so it's difficult to assimilate all that information and try and make any kind of storyline out of it. If you remember for season two, like Red Angel, lots of red stars. What are we talking about? I had a hard time holding on to the storyline when it was going in real time, let alone anything out of a trailer.
I think that it's kind of clear, though, that we're getting definitely the vibe that the Federation, well, we're being told that the Federation pretty much is on its last legs. Is the guy that's in that room, is he the president of the Federation of Six Worlds?
More of a club at this point.
Yeah.
And Saru, we get another stirring speech from Saru, apparently.
Yes. So it sounds like
the only reason the planets are a part of the club is so they get a discount at the local Starbucks.
That's right.
they can attract more advertisers as a network.
Absolutely. Yeah. The website. We need them for the website. So I get the impression that Discovery's mission at this point is going to be to kind of help get the band back together. They've got to get their own band back together again, of course. But we do see some shots where it appears that Burnham has found her way back to Discovery Organic. That could be part of some sort of rescue mission that Giorgio and Tilly and Saru were part of.
Yeah, because you see Tilly and Burnham giving a big smiling hug, like, oh, we finally get to see each other.
Yay.
And we seem to lose track back and forth about Booker. So is Booker in the entire season? Is he in the beginning part of it and then disappears? It's really hard to tell at this point. So we know some things, we've seen some things, we know some species that are in this, but story-wise, we're not sure exactly how it all fits together.
Not even close. The next trailer was a little more storyline.
Somewhat so. We will see, because the next session and the next trailer was for Star Trek Picard. Oh, by the way, and all they said about the premiere of season 3 of Discovery was 2020. So now Discovery has taken the place of Picard as to, we know kind of when, but we don't know exactly when, because we have a premiere date for Picard. January 23rd.
Awesome.
Yes.
And it will be episodes. So it's going to be releasing episodes on a weekly basis, like they've been doing with Discovery. Which I think is a bit odd, because they talked about, you know, Patrick was going on so much about it's bingeable. Well, you can't binge it if it only comes out.
No, that's not how binging works.
Yeah.
When it's all done, you can binge it, sure. But do you want people to wait the 10 weeks? I don't know.
I'm not doing it.
We did get one piece of information that I think, I don't know whether Craig, you were thinking this, but we have a sequence at the beginning of this trailer where Data is in the fields at the Chateau Picard, and he's wearing his Next Generation television series outfit, and Picard, wearing his television series outfit, comes walking up to him, and Data is painting a picture of this cloaked figure at the edge of a stormy sea. Data says, you know, do you want to finish the painting? And Picard says, I don't know how. And Data says, oh, I think you do. And then we have these shots of space battle or battle going on with ships firing on a planet, spaceships. So it's very fast cuts to figure out what's going on in that. I can't tell if that is part of the dream or whether that's the way the trailer is edited. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about...
I got the feeling that the data part was the dream, then he woke up and the rest of the stuff was in the real world. So I don't know what
like
that
a dream or vision or something.
Yeah, I don't know what that dream has to do with anything yet, obviously, but there were obviously a lot of guest appearances in the trailer.
Yes.
Because originally this was not going to be a TNG reunion show. Well, scratch that off the list because it is.
Yeah,
I get the feeling though, because at the end of the trailer we see Riker and Troy, and they're living off in a cabin in the woods. Well, I call it a cabin. It's like this giant cabin in the woods.
Right.
And they have a child. It sounds like it's a girl, saying that, oh, you know, someone's here to see you. And Riker, being the loving father that he is, says, stop yelling. Yeah. And it's Jean-Luc Picard, come to visit. Come a visiting.
And he perks up on that news.
But I get the impression that they're both out of Starfleet as well, and that we're probably not going to see that much of Riker and Troy.
No, nor Geordi or Data, but they're there nonetheless.
So we, the other shot we see in the previous trailer of Data playing, I think he's playing poker with Picard, right? I think he's playing cards with him in that one.
Was the initial teaser.
Yeah, the first trailer. So leads you to wonder, so is that another dream sequence, or is that really Data or Lore or B4 or whoever in that
scene? I get the feeling that it's, I don't know which one it is, but it's, you know, visions or flashback kind of thing, not flashback, but like vision kind of thing where, you know, he keeps having these little visions with Data. Cause, from what I understand, that Data's death has been haunting him. Mm.
Data's a ghost.
Yeah, I'm the ghost of Data present.
Ooh. I forged these isolinear chips in the life that I born. I'm here to warn you about Christmas future. Yeah.
We also get to see the return of Vasquez Rock.
Yes.
Yay. And it has an H today.
I was expecting someone to make a joke like, didn't there used to be a Gorn that lived here?
Yeah.
Has anyone seen the Metrons?
And isn't this Vulcan? I'm very confused now. We see a scene with TOS Romulan warbirds, birds of prey.
Original ones.
Yeah. So now my thought on it is the same as a lot of people's, that, well, if their home planet was destroyed, they probably were like, whatever ships we got to, you know, get this thing out of mothballs and, you know, get people where they need to get to. And they just grabbed everything that they could and are, you know, just using stuff for scrap and trying to piece things together.
Logic. Yeah. I mean, we'd do the same thing if, you know, modern planes weren't available, you'd go back to whatever. Does that thing in the museum run? Get it out here.
Exactly.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can?
Yeah, well, let him out.
Get it out of here. Yeah, get it out of here.
We see some figures that appear to be androids. They're shaven head. They appear to have the same color eyes as Data. They're wearing red. I think it's a red jumpsuit, although we're only seeing them like shoulder and up. But there are rows of them. And they have numbers on their forehead, number, letter designations on their forehead. Now, it appears as if the Romulans are in charge of that Borg cube. And I'm thinking that they're doing experiments on these Borg and somehow it involves...
I forget the color, but you know, they were pieces of the the Borg that weren't green, but they were like purple. I think it was purple. So I was like, oh, is it, they must be have it under control or something. And that's why some of the missing parts weren't green.
We do see a quick shot of what appears to be either a sick bay or an operating room, and there's a figure lying dead on the ground, and there are bits and pieces of Borgs hanging up. And then off in the distance, and we cut to a close-up shot, we see Seven of Nine on that table. She's got another figure cradled in her arms, and she's crying. Now, my first thought was that was Hugh. I don't know if that's the case or not, though. I have no way of knowing that. It's just my speculation that what is going to give her that emotional a response to somebody's death. So I don't know. We also see Seven of Nine shooting two phaser pistols at once, going in someplace with guns ablaze.
All right.
Claiming what, she's the person who helps when no one else will help, or some words of that effect.
So it appears that, you know, Seven of Nine is just not there to go, hey, Picard, and it's kind of showing up like Riker and Troy in a scene going, hey, you're going to be doing this thing? Okay, well, that's cool. That she's got a big stake in whatever's going on here.
Yeah, she seems like has a little more purpose in the show than just the guest appearances by some of the other former crew.
Right. Although I think that you're right that kind of Data is there if he's in dream sequences is kind of this Picard wrestling with his own thoughts about things. And he's just kind of, you know, someone to have that argument with about things and trying to work through different things that have happened to him. Somebody speculated that the dog, the pit bull that's in there, number one, is actually an emotional support dog.
You named the dog number one?
Yeah, long I don't story. Think. He, I hope he doesn't tell Riker about that when he sees him. Yeah, funny story, Riker. Didn't think I was going to see you again.
Number two in the house?
That's okay. I just named this chicken I killed Picard. No.
And I also want to note that it doesn't look like Picard's really big into sweeping because there was the dust on the floor. There's a lot of
his house cleaning skills leave much to be desired.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't see any other people on
Chateau Picard.
The entire there's like no one else there. What is he doing the entire thing himself?
It's automated.
Although he does talk, we do see a scene where he's talking to someone else, which appears to be at the chateau, and they're just sitting around a fire outside. And the guy's saying, do you really want to go back out and, you know, into space like that? Is that, you know, are you serious? And he says, oh, definitely. Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's someone else who actually works at this place that you don't have visions of. Well, my brother is dead, so now I have to do everything here. I don't know what's going on there, but the fact that he gets a single bottle out from that place is amazing if it's all him. Good on you. Good on you, Jean-Luc.
I'm with Craig. They probably have grape bots or something.
Well, you see bots floating and sprinkling water.
I thought that's those true. Were the Amazon drones delivering packages.
No.
Little grape packages.
All righty. Any final thoughts on either of our two trailers that we got to sit and mull over?
More. Yes. I want more.
Yes, there are other thoughts.
I don't know if we're going to... Well, we'll probably get another trailer for Picard before it comes out, but I'm guessing it's going to be pretty darn late. It may even be after we get the last short trek. Of the season two of Short Trek, because that will be the gap, because the Short Trek comes out on January 9th and then Picard comes out on the 23rd. So we've got a couple of weeks in there.
Yeah. Well, my final thoughts on this is I'm so ready to see this.
Like, well, man. Good news. You now know when you have to wait until, at least for Picard.
Yeah, my birthday.
Well, that's okay. I'm getting up like way too early in the morning the next day to fly to California. So it's going to be, well, I'm going to watch, but I surely should be. Because I imagine it's going to be one of those things where for some reason they decided it can't come out until like 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
Yep.
Going, Why? Let's put it out after midnight.
Because that'd be too easy.
Midnight, whose time zone?
Well,
yeah,
mine. There you go. I've settled it. Mine. That's which time zone. So there. All right. That brings us to the end of our main mission. But if you have any thoughts about any of the short treks that have come out so far, or about the Picard or Discovery trailers, some theories about what's going on here or who that person is there, why don't you just drop us a note? You can send it to, you can put it on our Facebook page. That's probably the easiest way. Go to facebook.com/thetopicistrek and let us know what your theories are or your thoughts are about it. But now it's time to go on to our Warp Speed Roundtable. And last time around.
No, not those.
Well, that's interesting because last time around we asked what single scene do you think encapsulates Nog's spirit? And if you have still have thoughts on that, listener, you can send us a note on it. But this time we're asking, what is a quality that the Tribbles inherited by getting part of Edward's DNA?
Oh, I got this one.
Now, I'm going to start off because it was a silly episode, so I'm going to give a silly answer. It turns out that because of getting part of that DNA, the Tribbles are really, really good at improv comedy. So that's something they got out of that.
I knew it wasn't the hairy quality because Edward is bald or very recessive.
Hey, that was mine.
Okay. Oh, my.
Mine is sloth. Edward was not a good, a hard worker. He did as little as possible, and so do the Tribbles.
What are they going to do? They eat, and they reproduce.
Yeah. Had he been a harder worker, maybe they would have actually done something.
To benefit society.
Yes.
I see.
They could have cleaned out the air ducts or something. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to do some work around here. We got to earn
instead
our
of
keep.
Like stopping up all the air ducts, actually, was what they ended up doing in the Cabot instead.
Yeah.
All right. Apparently, I stole yours, Craig, but have you come up with another one?
Mm. Well, I think they had the same voice.
Ah.
Just higher pitch for the Tribbles. Yeah, see?
Yeah, you pitch it down, it's definitely Edward. You're right.
He sounds. You pitch it down, and it sounds like Archer.
They also inherited that they only eat at Arby's. They won't go to Burger King or McDonald's or anything like that. So it's really weird.
Oh, by the way, I know we already talked about it, but that short trek, I thought it was hilarious when they were discussing having eaten one. Yeah. Well, yes, I tasted it. I was like, what?
Well, he also, he said he fed it to the other guy. Yeah. The other guy was like, and he liked it. And he was shaking his head going, no. And he's a foodie, you know?
Yeah. He liked it. Yeah. I thought I'm sorry. I just thought that was funny.
There was a lot of tongue in cheek humor in that episode.
Yeah.
I don't know if I needed that vision of what a Tribble looks like after you shave it. It just, I suppose it's the same thing you get when you shave a cat or something like that. It's like, oh, underneath, it's like, yeah, that's not so attractive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know, right? It's like you ever had a dog and you give them a bath and they drop down like two sizes because they're all deflated. That's funny.
All right, but we've come to the end of the show. It's about time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
Where's the dilithium chamber?
It's where those Tribbles are over there No, not those tribbles. Okay. Those tribbles. Well, not. Well, there's okay. a lot of tribbles here all of a sudden. So this is all bad
right,
news.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go over there then.
Okay. He's not coming back, is he? You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. Check me out on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, Facebook Comedy Forecast, MeWe Comedy Forecast, Instagram Comedy Forecast, your refrigerator Comedy Forecast, all over the place.
We get and the picture.
Oh, you're back? Sorry. Were you able to make it back?
Those things do taste funny.
I don't want to ask any. Well, while he's getting that taste out of his mouth, where can people find Chuck and Craig these days?
We make it easy. Just go to Google or your favorite search engine and look for Technorama Podcast. That's where we are.
Yep. Oh, by the way, Clinton.
Yes.
I want to invite you and Chuck over for a barbecue this weekend.
Those aren't meatballs, are they?
Sort of.
Furriest meatballs I've ever seen. Maybe if you boil them, it'll render off the fur or something. I don't know.
Do you have to debone a tribble?
No. Did you hear those?
You sure?
Did you hear the kids crunching in that commercial?
Good point. They don't say crunching milk then, do they?
Kind of like they're a like furry little chicken nugget.
Ah. It's kind of like the little sand bones in like the canned salmon. You know, you can kind of eat them, but okay, let's move along.
Do you cough red up a hairball like
tofu?
Do you cough up a hairball like a cat?
Yeah.
All right, let's hit the theme, boys.
Please, none too soon.
If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
Don't put on the red shirt. Oh, shirt.
Wow.
Especially the fuzzy one.
Yeah.
More tribbles, please.